Go ahead and turn, if you will, over to the book of 1 Kings. Look to chapter 20, and we'll be looking at a verse here in just a minute. 1 Kings chapter 20. King Ahab of the land of Israel was a bad fellow. In fact, we could probably say he is the best of the worst examples. And so many times when we talk about King Ahab, we take it from a very negative standpoint. We look at the bad things that he did and we're very justified in doing that. This evening, though, to begin our study, I want us to look at a statement that he made that was not so bad. In fact, it was very good for us to think about. King Ahab had learned that Syria was coming down to make war. The king of Syria, Ben-Hadad, sent a message. And he said to King Ahab, get your best wives and your best children and the best stuff of Israel together because I'm going to take it. And Ahab said, okay, I'll do it. Seeing how easy that had been, Ben-Hadad sent another message. And he said, scratch the first message that I sent. I'm now going to send my men and whatever they desire, anything they want, you let them have it. King Ahab could not tolerate this. And so the threats were made. If King Ahab stood in the way, what was going to be done to him? What was going to happen? And we come down to verse 11. And this is the message that Ahab sent back to King Ben-Hadad. The king of Israel, Ahab, answered, tell him, let not him who straps on his armor boast himself as he who takes it off. King Ahab said, don't say something's done before it's finished. My children are very acquainted with this statement. All three of my children have been very interested in athletics. And every season, I'll hear the same thing. Team we're going to play tonight's no good. We're going to whip them. It's probably going to be 15 or 20 to zero. We're going to wipe them out. And I quote King Ahab to him, let not him who puts on the armor boast as him who takes it off. They have learned that King Ahab was right. This evening, I want us to talk about this idea. This idea of boast without armor. Because I believe if we are not very cautious and very careful, we find ourselves in the position of Ben-Hadad, thinking that things are done, that things are going to go our way, that things are going to be all right before we even enter into them. And at the outset of the lesson this evening, let me just say, this is going to take us in several directions tonight. We're going to be looking at several very major ideas that may on the surface seem somewhat unrelated, but I believe they're interrelated in the fact that they are boast that we make without armor. So this evening, as we consider this idea, let's consider where we stand in making these statements. I believe one of the places that oftentimes we see this happening is in our boast of spiritual victory. I think sometimes we are very much like Ben-Hadad. When it comes to spiritual things, temptations that we're going to face, we say our enemy is nothing. There's nothing that they can do to us. In fact, you remember when Ben-Hadad lost the first battle? He said, oh, well, the reason we lost that battle is because Israel's God is a God of the mountains, so we'll fight him on the plains, we'll win the next time. What a boast. He underestimated the Lord God. And I would suggest to us this evening that sometimes we underestimate our enemy. There are times, I'm afraid, when we think we can take off the armor before it's ever put on. That we think we are victorious before the battle ever takes place. And I would encourage you, if you trend in that direction, as I think all of us do from time to time, is to give that some very serious consideration. Let's note a group of men who did that very thing. Go with me over to Matthew chapter 26. Matthew chapter 26. You'll recall that we're very near the death of Jesus at this point. And Jesus is telling the apostles what's going to happen to him, telling him the things that are about to take place. Let's notice what he says to them beginning in verse 31. Jesus said to them, "You will all fall away because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee." Peter taking the lead, as typically was the case. Verse 33. Peter answered him, "Though they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away." Jesus said to him, "Truly I tell you, this very night before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." Peter said to him, "Even if I must die with you, I will not deny you." And all the disciples said the same. Here was a boast without armor. Peter, the other disciples as well, very inaccurately sized up the enemy. They did not understand what forces were at work to derail not only the plan of God, but to derail their own personal faith. And we know what happens, don't we? Before the rooster crowed three times that evening, Peter denied his Lord. The apostles went fleeing when the persecution began. It was a boast without armor that ended in spiritual defeat. We, oftentimes like Peter, oftentimes like the other apostles, I'm afraid do the same thing. We fail to give real consideration to exactly who and what we're up against. There's a passage I'd like for us to think about for just a minute that I'm not sure I have taken as seriously in the past. Well, let me take that back. I know I haven't taken as seriously in the past as I need to. Have you ever thought about what Paul told the Ephesians in chapter 6 and verse 12? He says, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood." Now listen to this. "But against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places." That's quite a list. As Paul is writing to them and saying, before you put on the armor, consider who you're going up against. Consider the forces that are at work against your soul. He says, think about just exactly who's wanting to bring you down. Oftentimes it's easy to fight the enemy we see. Back in days past, when it was the old European style of warfare, where the two opposing sides would come out onto the field and would begin firing at each other, it was easy to see and to know your enemy. But as things began to change, guerrilla-style warfare came in where your enemy would slip out and shoot and then kind of get back into the brush. It became much harder. Let me suggest to you that in a sense, I believe that's how we fight both ways. Sometimes we see our enemy head on, but there are times when there are forces at work, as Paul says, who are the powers of the darkness, who are seeking to manipulate, seeking to destroy us. Do we see the point Paul is trying to make to us? I would suggest to us as well that we remember how Peter later, after this time when he fell to the temptation, described Satan. Here was a man who had come in a sense face to face, a man who understood the workings of the power of Satan. You remember what he says? Chapter 5, verse 8 of his first epistle. He says, "Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour." There's a lot of animals Peter could have put here. But is the point not made? If we heard one evening that the circus train had come through town and one of the cars had overturned and there were lions loose in our neighborhood, we wouldn't be outside, would we? We wouldn't be out with a steak trying to get them to come, would we? We would take precaution. And for that very reason, Peter says, you be careful. Your enemy is trying to destroy you. He's prowling about like a lion, looking for someone to destroy. God is making the point. He is telling us that the forces we are up against will absolutely destroy and crush us unless we make the decision to suit up the armor for battle. I want to go back for just a minute and follow up on these passages that we just talked about. Where Satan is at work, let's consider once again Jesus' words to Peter prior to what happened. Prior to the time that these things took place. In Luke chapter 22, verses 31 and 32. Jesus is talking to Peter here, and he says, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan demanded to have you that he might sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith might not fail. And when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers." I think what may be most telling about this passage is what Jesus did not say. He did not say, "Now Peter, you are one smart man. Peter, you're a savvy guy. Peter, you're wily in these situations. You've got what it takes to take on that enemy. Use those natural abilities." He didn't say a word about that, did he? As he saw what was coming, he said, "Peter, I have prayed for you." He knew that to face these spiritual forces of darkness, this enemy that goes prowling about like a roaring lion, that it was not something on the inside that we intrinsically have that's going to save us. He knew that it was the Lord giving us strength that will merit that salvation. And that's what he told Peter. As we think about what the Apostle Paul said, following that verse, when he's talking about the forces at work against us, he says in verse 13, "Therefore take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm." I try not to make big deals out of little deals, so I want you to understand that when I make this point. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but it would be interesting for me to know how many of you learned what's going to follow here. The breastplate of righteousness, the sword of the Spirit, the helmet of salvation. How many of you learned that as the Christian armor? That's not what Paul calls it. He says you put on the armor of God. Why? Because it is God who will save us. It is God who offers the protection. It is God who will save us from these forces that He has just so frighteningly described. I think as well, we think about what Peter followed with. After he talked about the devil walking about like a roaring lion, verse 9, he says, "Resist him," how? "Firm in your faith." That's how we fight the forces that are against us. We don't boast and say out loud or even to ourselves, "I'm a strong guy. I'm a strong Christian. I know what it takes to defeat Satan. I'm going to be able to do it." We, like Ben-Hadad, will find ourselves in a great deal of trouble if we place stock in our own abilities rather than in God. But now let's take that point to a different level. Let's talk about daily boast. Because I believe sometimes our lack of sobriety about spiritual forces working against us is seen very much in our daily lives. The fact that we kind of overcompensate and say, "Well, I've got what it takes. I'm a strong Christian. I'm someone who can overcome these things." It tends to make us very lax in our service to God and very lax in building the faith that we need in God. And on a daily basis, we end up making boast that we cannot accomplish. We boast about putting on the armor. Kind of like when we're taking it off. We could take this point in any number of directions tonight, but let me talk to you just about two or three things that I think we see on a very regular basis. I think there are those who in their daily boast, who talk putting on the armor like one taking it off, who will make these grand things in their lives, by saying, I don't allow my companions to influence me. You see, I've been a Christian 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and there are those who are around me who I tend to associate with on a regular basis. I know they're bad folks. I know they're not good people, but they don't bother me. It doesn't hurt my faith. Careful. Those of us who have grown up hearing lots of lessons like this, I think almost when a point like that comes up, we immediately think, do not be deceived. Evil companions corrupt good morals. Evil company corrupts good habits. I'll remind us that that passage was written to Christians about Christians. There were those who were trying to convince Christians that the resurrection was already past or not coming or some kind of false doctrine. And Paul says, don't be deceived by that. I think the general point, though, can be seen in all manner of ways. That we can very much be brought down by those around us. In fact, if we will take time to read the book of Proverbs, we will find over and over and over where Solomon is saying, you be careful. What a man who knew what he was talking about. A man who lost his faith because of who he had decided to have around him. I'll just remind all of us this evening that moral corruption occurs when we delight in those who do not delight in the Lord. I'm not saying this evening that we are to be standoffish. That as a group of monks, we're to go off and to live in some cave and never have contact with anybody else. I'm not saying this evening that we must limit all of our associations to only those with whom we share a common faith. To do that is to thwart the entire plan of God of going out and being the light in the world. But what I am saying is this. If we enjoy being with people who have absolutely no concern for God, we are making boast without armor. And when we say it is not going to impact me, we are speaking as one strapping on the armor, as though we were one who was taking it off. Understand that when we associate with people whose interest is in worldly things, our interest becomes worldly as well. I don't care if you are 13 or 30 or 90. If you associate with people who do not love God, and you enjoy that kind of lifestyle, it will impact you. Let me talk about another boast that I think sometimes we make on a daily basis. This one, again, not limited to a particular age, although we know in youth this is a major problem. But there are those who say, now look, I know what you're saying here about the temptations of impurity, but hey, I can be alone with my girlfriend. I can be alone with my boyfriend and nothing is going to happen. That is a boast without armor. What we are doing is we are saying that we can take on something that has been problem and pain for centuries. How many times can we see how quickly this battle is lost when we're overcome by physical desire? How many times have we seen when we talk as one who is taking off the armor, when we're the one who's strapping it on, and we overestimate our strength, and we overestimate, or maybe I should say underestimate our enemy, and we find ourselves falling to this temptation? Go back with me, if you will, to the book of Proverbs, chapter 7. I taught a class not too long ago on the book of Proverbs and came to a better appreciation for this book, especially the first few chapters, than I ever had. These first few chapters, as you'll recall, as a father, written anyway, as a father talking to his son. Notice sometimes how many times the father warns about fornication and adultery. I want you to look here in chapter 7, though, at just one of these. Here the writer is speaking as someone who's kind of watching a situation developing. Verse 6 he says, "For at the window of my house I have looked on through my lattice, and I have seen among the simple, I have perceived among the youths a man lacking sense. Passing along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house, in the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness." The prostitute's house. Someone who is going to be a temptation to him. Did you notice that last section? Verse 8, he passed along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house. What time was it? In the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness, in other words, in the cover of darkness. The chapter continues on down to talk about her coming out and kind of using her wily ways against him. Let's skip down to verse 21. It says, "With much seductive speech she persuades him. With her smooth talk she compels him. All at once he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter or as a stag is caught fast. Till an arrow pierces its liver as a bird rushes into a snare, he does not know that it will cost him his life. And now, O sons, listen to me and be attentive to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for many a victim she has laid low. And all her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is the way to Sheol, going down to the chambers of death." Solomon says, when we purposely place ourselves in the wrong place and the wrong time and think we can survive that, it is a boast without armor. This is a sin that has beset many people in the history of the world. And when there's occasions when I have opportunity to talk to someone, usually a young person who has fallen into this sin, I first of all tell them, look, we've all sinned. It's a matter of changing. It's a matter of turning. It's a matter of not being like that anymore. But to those who have not taken that road, let me encourage you, take this seriously. Do not boast and say, I can be alone in an apartment. I can be alone in a car. I can be in some cover of darkness and nothing's going to happen. Because you may very well find yourself in the place of this young man, taking that road to death. Let me mention a third one that I think we see many times on a daily basis. And I've just kind of summed up all of this into one word, in the word media. And the idea being someone saying, oh, you know, TV, radio, movies, those things don't have an impact on me. I know that when you go to a theater and you see all of this, or you turn on the TV, or you turn on the radio, you know, you hear all of that, but it has no influence on me. There, my friends, is another boast without armor. Sometimes we boast and we say something to the effect of, well, it's only rated PG-13 because... Parents, you ever hear that from your children? You ever hear that from other parents? It's only rated PG-13 because of the language. You know, I know they're going to say this or and that, and they're going to take the Lord's name 25 times in the movie, and they're going to drop several words that are really bad. But hey, it's only the language. Or you hear somebody say, it's just rated R because of the violence. You know, it's a shoot 'em up and they're going to be people decapitated. They're going to be blown to bits. That's all it is. Nothing else. And pardon me if this sounds a little crude. I don't mean it to, but I want to make my point. The idea being, as long as everybody keeps their clothes on, everybody else is okay who's watching that. I listen to the radio, and I know I hear these songs that talk about this man seducing a woman, this woman seducing a man. I know I listen to these songs where it's just a string of explicatives, and I know that. I turn on my TV, and I know that those programs about somebody having an affair with somebody else, I mean, that's not godly, but it doesn't influence me. Careful. Careful. Let me make this point. We are in the world. There is no escaping ungodliness. You can be walking down the streets of Madison, Huntsville, Athens, and you may hear someone let out a string of curse words. You may very well be driving down the road, and before you even realize it, you see a billboard that should not be seen by anybody, much less the public where children can see it. We are in the world. And I'm going to say that in a sense, we've got to make some decisions individually and as parents about what's good and what's bad. We know that there is a genre of literature and movies and TV that are kind of fairy tale kinds of things. And it may be very obvious that when you go in, though there's violence in that, it's almost like the old Roadrunner and Coyote cartoons. You know it's not real. It's obviously not real. We've got to make some decisions along those lines. I understand that. But I ask you to think very, very hard. If you enjoy going to a movie where the name of the Lord is going to be taken in vain over and over and over again. I want you to think about what it says. If you enjoy a TV program that is filled with people changing spouses. I want you to think about if your favorite music is typically characterized by its radical nature, by its ability to offend moral senses. And I want you to ask, can your boast withstand those things that can so easily invade the mind? Are you really strong enough to say that when I drop that rock on my foot working out of the yard, the first thing that won't pop into my mind is what I heard on the screen last night? Can you really make that boast? Because let me tell you, what we fill our minds with is what we are. Be careful. Let me talk about one other kind of boast before we finish up this evening. Let me talk about future boasts. Sometimes our boast about the future can lead us to talk like one taking off the armor. There are times when we've got to be very careful. And in fact, James warns us clearly about this, such a familiar reading. But let's go ahead and look at it. James chapter 4, look with me down to verse 13. James writes, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist," or the translation I like better here, "you are a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil." I'm afraid sometimes we tend to talk like we've got an unlimited time to spend on this earth. I think a lot of times we forget our mortality, and thus we tend to boast in such a way as this. Let me remind you of another passage that makes this point to us. Psalm 103, verses 15 and 16, he says, "As for man, his days are like grass. He flourishes like a flower of the field, for the wind passes over it, and it is gone, and its place knows it no more." Many times we think death is what happens to the other people. That we're going to be here, and while we may have an intellectual grasp, we don't really comprehend what these passages are telling us. I was talking to a man last week who was lamenting turning 30. I asked him, so you turn 30 today, and he just kind of bowed his head, nodded. And I said, "Let me illustrate how quickly your 30s will go." Those of you who are a little older, maybe you can snap a little quicker. It's interesting. We don't understand that until we start building up those years. And as we start building those up, perhaps it's at that time we begin to get a little better picture, but I'm not sure we ever get a full grasp. And let me say this, God does not want us sitting around with some kind of morbid pessimism. He doesn't want us sitting around thinking about those kinds of things, but what He does want us to think about is the fact that while we are here, it is a very quick experience, and during those years that we're here, He wants full dependence of us on Him. That's what He desires. However, if we do not allow ourselves to comprehend that, we'll never have that dependence that we need. Our boast will be in what we are going to do. Like these people here in the book of James, I'm going to go here, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to spend a year here, as though we're in charge of that. Sometimes I think, especially for us, living when we do, that boast is often caused by the fact that we feel like if we can collect enough stuff while we're here on this earth, we've got everything covered. If my bank account is full, if I have a good pension, if I've got a nice retirement that's coming in, if I have bonds, if I have stocks, if I have CDs, if I have antiques I can sell off, if my house is paid for, if my life insurance is paid up, if my health insurance is paid up, and we somehow think that if we surround ourselves with all this stuff, we're shielded and there is nothing that can happen to us that we do not expect to happen. We can deal with anything on our own. Be careful. There was a man the Lord described who had very similar thoughts. Look with me over to Luke chapter 12. Another familiar reading, but boy, if this doesn't drive the point home, I don't know what does. Luke chapter 12. We look down to verse 16. Jesus told them a parable saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this, I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.'" Friends, we have been blessed more than any people who have ever lived. If you need to be reminded of that, get your old world history book out and study it a little bit. Look at the deaths where people died off because of poverty, because of starvation, because of hordes of enemies who come in and wipe them out. And then compare that, or maybe better, contrast that to your life. Do not boast that everything's okay. Do not boast and say that everything is fine because I have laid up all of these things. I have built my bigger barns. I'm going to be cared for. I can eat. I can drink. I can be merry. God may cause us to do a little soul searching if we make that boast without armor. Let's remember who our spiritual forces, the ones who are against us, are. Let's remember those daily boasts that we so oftentimes make. Let's be careful about our future boast. So where then do the real boast lie? We do well to remember Jeremiah 9. Jeremiah 9, verses 23 and 24. The Lord says, "Let not the wise man boast in his wisdom. Let not the mighty man boast in his might. Let not the rich man boast in his riches, But let him who boasts boast in this, that he who understands and knows me, that I am the Lord who practices steadfast love, justice, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, declares the Lord. It's no real surprise to me that in 1 Corinthians 1, Paul takes that quote from Jeremiah and he brings it forward and he says, let this be our boast. Let our boast be in the Lord. We do well to remember our limitations. A sign of spiritual growth is understanding who we're fighting. A sign of spiritual growth is understanding that we do not place ourselves in compromising situations that can destroy our soul. We do well to remember that God controls the future, not us. And our dependence must be in Him. We do well to remember those things. We do better, though, to remember who is all-powerful and who will always win. That's the boast with armor. Because you see, the Lord has put on that armor. And He can speak as the one who takes it off. He has gone up against the forces of darkness and has won. Let's let our boast be in Him. Let's let our boast be in the one who can truly give the protection that will lead us to heaven.